real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Jill Bender. So great to have you here this afternoon. Well, as we approach the weekend, I have a question for you. What do you consider to be the role of the local church? Is it to help you worship, to entertain, maybe to serve the community? Is it to be part of a family? What is the role? What do you consider to be the role of the local church, and is it changing? We're going to talk a little bit about that as we head into this hour. We're going to talk to an author and get his opinion on if that role is changing and how it could be maybe better. Well, what was your church like growing up? As I think about my church, I'm just thinking that it was a really big church, and yet it felt so small. People came together. They helped with if there was a tragedy, there was something going on in someone's life. Even if you hardly knew them, they were part of your church. And so you kind of came alongside them. Ted Ross is here at the controls. Krista, yes. Roger is also listening as well. And Ted, what was your experience like as you think about church kind of growing up as a kid?
A huge part of my life because my dad was a pastor. So
you were at everything.
I was pretty much at everything, yes. You know, middle of the week, probably 3 days a week, seriously, I'd have to be at church. So I grew up there, and a lot of great people there looking back. You know, it's an extended family of sorts, kind of the village raising the child concept. And my grandparents, too, I think about them. They're always at church, you know, in the kitchen for potlucks and things like that. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure churches still have potlucks. I know we do at ours occasionally, but not nearly as often, I think. So it's not quite the social hub it used to be.
Right. There were a lot of instances where my mom would say, well, we have to put together a casserole. We're going over to so-and-so's house because, you know, something happened. Or, you know, there's a wedding today, so we're making a big potato salad, and that's what we're bringing to the wedding today. And so it was a very different experience than it is now. And I, too, my mom was in youth ministry at my church, and so I feel like we kind of lived there. I'm surprised we didn't pay rent because the kids in my family were there a lot, but it felt very different. Even after service, there would be like a gathering room where I remember you had to be older than 16 in order to go to this room called the fireside room, and you could have cookies and coffee, but you had to kind of be an adult, and then you would gather with the people in your community, and it was just a very sweet, special place to be. And it seems today that it's more kind of come on in and come on out, and it's a different experience.
Not a lot of lingering after the service, maybe a little bit. I know a lot of, like, especially mega churches are trying to do the coffee bar thing and, you know, incorporate that in there to cultivate that, but I'm not sure how well it's working.
Right. A lot of churches are trying a lot of different things, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, maybe living a little bit more parallel lives with the people in our church instead of being part of that community and part of that family. And is that hurting the church community? So we'll chat about that a little bit. You know, and then there's this morning I just was at a funeral of a friend, and it was just so, it just really moved my heart to just see all of the people gathering around this family. And that's kind of what happens at a funeral, I know, but it was, I don't feel that and see that on a daily or weekly basis. And with everything that's happening in our country and in our world, and just how, I don't know, I've just been kind of breathless, I guess, this week and just thinking about it. And the scripture that one of the readers read today was Lamentations 3, and it just really settled my heart. And I'd love to read it because I think it'll settle yours too. It says, "This I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning, and great is your faithfulness." And I just thought, what a better place to just sit in a sanctuary of a church and know that God's faithfulness is so great, and what a gift he's given us with the local church.
And to enjoy that community of believers coming together, encouraging each other, lifting one another up. We need to come together, especially in moments of sadness and pain like that. Sadly, one of the things that gets in the way of that, though, is our technology, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of separates us and isolates us.
Yes. There's even as we're sitting in the sanctuary, you see a lot of people checking out their phones. And is that consuming us? John Stone Street has some thoughts on that.
Who's in control of your time? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Pop-up notifications can take over our lives. We get notifications for text, Facebook messages, retweets, breaking news, and in some cases, I'm not joking, Facebook actually does this, notifications for your notifications. It's distracting. In the name of staying informed, we allow interruptions to work in relationships for trivial purposes. The makers of these apps and websites don't want you to turn this feature off, so they bury the controls deep in the settings. Look, I enjoy social media as much as the next person, and there's nothing wrong with it per se. But when it controls your time and not the other way around, it's time to fight back. A simple way is disable notifications. Even though apps and websites don't make it easy, the time spent figuring it out or finding someone who can is well worth it. We should engage technology on our terms, not its terms. And this is a quick and easy way to make sure that happens. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
Well, welcome back. One of the things I get notices of for technology are different research that has to do, of course, with spirituality, religion, the church. And a really interesting study came out last year. It was a Pew Research poll that said that those who identify with no religious tradition, that number of people is actually increasing, while the people who identify with any church affiliation is actually decreasing. In fact, what the researchers call this group of people is the nones, meaning that they, N-O-N-E, the nones, because when it says religious affiliation, they check none. So this trend would kind of say that the church is no longer has a primary place in this cultural dialogue. They don't have what's called like a seat at the table. Do you find that that is happening as well? Well, my guest for today believes that it's actually the church's responsibility and its opportunity to recognize that this whole cultural landscape is changing in regard to church participation. And he says that there are ways that a church can still thrive in this new world, which he calls post-Christendom. We'll get into that. Let me tell you a little bit about him first. Dr. Mike McDaniel is the founding pastor of Grace Point Church in Northwest Arkansas. Before starting the church in Arkansas, Mike and his family served as church developers with the International Mission Board in the Republic of Zambia in Southern Africa. He has a doctoral degree from Dallas Theological Seminary, and Mike is also a certified CrossFit Level 1 trainer. Phew, that's exhausting even just saying that. You can find him at the Resurgent Church, theresurgent.church. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for allowing me to be there. And most people do not include the CrossFit element, but thank you so much.
I'm very impressed by that. I have a couple of friends who are also CrossFit trainers, and I know how hard they work. And so I also loved how in your book you talked about how that was really a great way to have conversations with people that you may not otherwise be in front of.
Absolutely. I think that's just part of the elements of the Resurgent Church is that we have to find our voice in the community, whether it's a yoga class or coaching a little league or gymnastics or being involved in the PTO or CrossFit for me has been a great avenue to connect with people that maybe some are far from God but are finding their way back to God.
So, Mike, you've written a book called The Resurgent Church, Seven Critical Ways to Thrive in This New Post-Christendom World. So help us kind of define this problem. Is it that people, while they may consider themselves spiritual, are not going to church or maybe not participating in building the church?
I think the Christendom element is the really key phrase there. And I know that needs some unpacking. It's not a post-Christian culture, which some have declared. I have theological problems with that. The gates of hell will not prevail against the church, and Christianity will grow, it will thrive, it will move forward. What is different now is Christendom is faded. Since Constantine to the present, or really years back now, Christendom, we were living in Christendom, but now we're in this post-Christendom time with a different culture where the institutional church, the fact that we're no longer invited to city council meetings, we've been expelled from school, those elements are in play. How does the church have a voice in this new post-Christendom culture that we live in?
So it's not a post-Christian world that we live in, but it's more a change in worldview. There used to be that everyone may have assumed that there is a God, he does exist. We'd like to see that opinion expressed in our conversations about our community and our world. And that, you say, is what has changed a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Spirituality is actually on the upswing. And now every form of spirituality and even your own creations of spirituality are being expressed out there, which just is an encouraging element to me, because it just shows you the hole inside the heart of every human being, and that what we've got to do is peel back that veneer of Christendom and really just present Christ and let that be formed, let him be formed in people. That's so there's a revival in spirituality, and that's the hope of the day in which we live, I think.
I'm talking to Dr. Mike McDaniel today in his book, The Resurgent Church, Seven Critical Ways to Thrive in This New Post-Christendom World. We're going to talk with Mike a little bit about what problems exist and maybe how the church can be the problem solver in getting people to come back to the church and creating an environment and a church where people would want to stay and churches would be able to thrive. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Connecting Faith, I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. Thrilled today to be talking to Dr. Mike McDaniel. He's written a book called The Resurgent Church, talking about what does the church need to do today to continue to draw people into it and to thrive in this what he calls a post-Christendom world. And Mike, there are kind of more repercussions of the church losing what you say is the place at the table, kind of losing its voice in discussions about moral and ethical issues in our society. Are there other repercussions for the society at large than just kind of having some empty churches?
Well, I think that's the first fruit that we're seeing, is we're seeing this exodus from the institutional church, and we're scratching our heads with this. Then we're also seeing in our communities people turning away from the morals, the fabrics, the things that help make America what it is, but also that are biblical values. So you see a rippling effect of Christianity being pushed to the side. And so I think what we're going to have to do here is have to retool and reestablish ourselves for the new generation that we're in.
So how could the community, our local communities, be affected by this diminishing role of the church and of the church body? I mean, we were just talking about some kind of superficial things as we were kicking off the show, that, you know, there's not a group of individuals who may run to your aid if you are suffering or in a position that you didn't think you'd be in, maybe homeless or lost a job or maybe just not able to feed your family, or perhaps there's a move and you just need some help. That used to be that community of believers, that body of Christ, who would come around and they would help. But that I don't see that happening as often as it used to. Is that just one of the results of this church kind of not staying together?
Well, I think there's multiple things. The church has become inward in Christendom, and the church has now got to become outward focused. We've got to have an externally focused mindset. Pastors need to be retooled. Leaders need to learn to think differently, almost like a missionary would think. It's how we've got to learn to think. Instead of just shepherding those within the walls, we need to see outside, and how are we going to engage where people work, live, play, where they do life, and how can we be the church there? Mm-hmm. How can we build relationships there? How can we influence there? And almost rebuild credibility. I think one of the things the church, Christendom, and Christians today are struggling with is how the world in Western cultures doesn't even see our message, our existence, as even plausible or credible. Mm-hmm. We need to reestablish that. And that's going to have to take some, again, retooling for the future. Yes, food pantries. Yes,
being there in times of crisis, but it's more of a lifestyle than it is just an event or a program that you put on.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading Harvard professor Robert Putnam, who participated in some studies after that Pew Research study came out, and he said one of the reasons that he said millennials and even young baby boomers are kind of rejecting this idea of the church body is because they were coming of age during this time where there were American culture wars in which religion publicly became associated with one brand of politics or another. Like there were sides chosen, and religion was on one side and non-religious were on the other side. And that those people are those who are determining now whether or not that the church is going to survive. So how is it that church leaders today can speak to those generations specifically?
Well, I do think that we have blurred the lines a lot in Christendom, inside the institutional church, where we have made almost a party line separation between that if God is a Republican, God must be a Republican. But there are elements that independents, that Democrats, that different ideologies out there that they bring to the table. So I think the church has it's going to be more relational than it's going to be program. Mm. It's going to be more of us being in people's lives, interfacing with people, and building those bridges rather than putting up a protest or a banner or a boycott. That if we're going to be able to influence, and this is not just me hypothetically bringing this down from the sky. This is based on the research that I did on from the churches from L.A. to New York City to small town to south of the Mason-Dixon line, churches that are doing that, that are impacting the millennials, that are impacting those who were once in the church that have now left the church.
Well, in fact, you make such a great comparison, interesting comparison in your 5 years of research, that there's really two groups of people who are outside of the church right now. There's the unchurched, which are actually a little more reachable than what you call the de-churched, those who were at one point part of the church and have chosen for a variety of reasons to leave. Talk a little bit more about that and how they would impact this movement to come back to the church.
Yes, I'm glad you saw that. That growing, ever-growing, never-churched is certainly a part of the community that's out there, and it is growing, where they have grown up without any faith affiliation whatsoever. And that just points again to the change in our culture. Those who are de-churched were those who were once church, but maybe for the past, I think Barna counts them out de-churched if they're gone for 6 months. In my study, I count them gone for if they were away from a church for over a year and with no affiliation. So whether it's 6 months or a year or however long, but they've walked away. There's been a scandal, there's been a schism, there's been a wound, there's been something that's happened that they've walked away, and many never intend to return. And there's going to have to be almost wounds healed, and there's going to have to be some really good bridges built if we're going to be able to reach the de-churched.
So how do we start to do church in this post-Christendom world?
I think we've got to move away from the copycat approach where I look like the denomination or I look like the network or I look like the latest cool conference that I just came from where the pastor's wearing skinny jeans and he drinks pour over coffee. And that's just the copycat approach. One of the chapters we spend in the book is probably one of the foremost of the seven new directions of the post-Christendom church, and that is that we understand we're not a set church, that we need to be contextualized within the context. Not every church is going to look the same, but we're going to dive into the context in which we live, and we're going to allow, this may stir some feathers with some of your listeners, we're going to actually allow the culture to help shape the church, not the theology, but shape how we do church rather than just looking again at denominations or patterns or what came out of the last generation. So I think understanding our context and letting that shape us is very, very important.
And you're very strong in everything you write in your book, just that these are some, like you say, retooling of how to do church, but that the gospel message does not change. The gospel of Jesus Christ remains the same. Can you speak to that a bit?
Absolutely. Yes, I you know, not only my theological underpinnings myself come from a strong evangelical inerrancy of Scripture point of view, but not only that, is every one of the churches that we did study that is effectively reaching into post-Christendom, every one of them comes from a doctrinal alignment with an evangelical inerrancy of Scripture kind of point of view. Yet, they're extremely different in many other aspects, but doctrinally, they are as straight as an arrow when it comes to the tenets of the faith. And so we're not wavering from that at all in this study.
Well, and you seem very hopeful that there, if churches do kind of just change the way they do things a little bit, maybe not change the gospel message, but change the way people receive that message and what they do maybe because of that message, you're very hopeful that we can see a turnaround.
Absolutely. In fact, I've written the book in to inspire, to encourage, and to help give some direction because there is hope. I come from a missions background to where I worked among a tribal people in Africa and so forth, and which was very unchurched, never churched in many places, had never even heard of Christ. And we just had to do things differently. We couldn't do things the way we do it in America. And it was whenever coming back to the States that I kept on my missionary glasses and kept looking through the lenses at America that I began to see, I've got to change how I do church, exist as a church, but not how we teach and believe. And the doctrines, they do not change, but it is very hopeful looking into the future. I think if we retool, face the reality, face the music, that we can't just keep doing it the way it's always been done.
Well, and this isn't just a change in music going from traditional to contemporary. You
Yes.
have some really great ideas laid out in your book.
Yes, yes. It is not just a musical surface level change. Again, the pastor's shirt's untucked or it's tucked in. You know, it is more of a DNA change to where we're seeing our communities differently. Mm-hmm. We're seeing our neighborhoods differently. We're learning the art of neighboring, if I can borrow from one book title. You know, we're learning how to be and love our neighbors as we were told to love in the Great Commandment.
Well, I'm talking to Dr. Mike McDaniel today. He's the founding pastor of Grace Point Church in Northwest Arkansas. He's written a book called The Resurgent Church, Seven Critical Ways to Thrive in the New Post-Christendom World. We're going to talk with him about what some of those ways are and how our churches can maybe begin to think about putting some of them into practice in their church as well. If you're listening today and you know someone in ministry or who works for a church and may be interested in this book, we have a nice stack to give away. Thanks to Mike and his publisher, Thomas Nelson. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Carissa can put you on the list to get one of those books. Or just go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can submit your name that way as well. And we will be right back for our next half hour. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us today. I'm talking to Mike McDaniel today, who's written a book called The Resurgent Church, Seven Critical Ways to Thrive in a New Post-Christendom World. We were talking about how there was a study done last year that said that some evangelicals, Protestants, Catholics, any of the mainstream religions, that that population is actually going a little bit down. Where the population is rising is in the nuns, those who have no religious affiliation. So what's happening, and how can the local church be a solution for that problem? Well, Mike has written this book, like I said, called The Resurgent Church. And Mike, you mentioned that there are seven critical ways that the church may need to change and kind of step up in order to solve this problem of people either not coming or wanting to leave the church. So one of the ways you talk about is that the pastors kind of need to move from just being a shepherd of this flock of people inside the walls to being a pioneer. Talk more about that way and why that's so essential.
Yes. So the my theological training and great institutions have no regret about that. But it really tooled me and equipped me to be a pastor, a shepherd, a leader within inside the four walls of the church, and really a leader within Christendom, where there was a moral fabric, a moral constant that was out there in society, where you prayed at Friday night football games, and you know, you recited the Lord's Prayer maybe before going to lunch in the schools or something like that. And that's gone, and we know that has gone, and so it's a different day. And so I got my retooling actually when I became a missionary and moved to Southern Africa and lived among a tribal people. And it was a total retooling to see culture and to see a people and to be able to speak their language, spend an entire year studying a tribal language, to speak their language, to be able to reach into villages and communities that had never heard the gospel. Now, take that contrasting way of doing life and ministry inside the four walls versus taking the gospel to communities and villages and so forth that have never heard it. That's the retooling that we need pastors and church leaders to take on, is how can I be a missionary inside of my own culture and context? How can I invent and create and lead, be an agent of change inside the context in which I am living? So I think it's really, in fact, it's probably one of my favorite chapters in really being able to study several pastors that are doing it very well inside of their context where they're at.
And so are they able to bring those people in the community kind of into the fold with the message of the gospel, but also with that message that you are part of our community?
Yes, they are. In fact, if you were to take, I'll take two pastors in particular, a part of the study that I studied them, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And if you were to listen to their Easter messages, let's say, each one of them would take you to an empty tomb. Each one of you would take you to a risen Savior. But they would have done it so extremely uniquely different. One is in a high intellectual area and would approach it as an apologist would. Another one is in L.A. and in Hollywood, that approaches it like an artist and would paint a picture of a risen Savior. And each one of them is able to speak the cultures, the language of that culture, and has seen their culture differently and been able to invite them into not only Sunday morning, but invite them into a relationship with Christ, invite them into small group, invite them in, and people are responding in very good numbers, healthy numbers at this time.
Well, and you even write, I love a couple of your tips, and one thing that you write is to be fluent in non-Bibleese. Because some people have never been to the church. They don't know some people. You wrote a story about how the people who you were ministering to did not know who Jesus was. And so that conversation needs to be at a very different level.
That's right. I think, and this is how it informs and changes even how we speak on Sunday morning. So if Sunday morning or Saturday night or whenever a church gathers in community and in corporate worship, is that the pastor has to think, not only am I speaking intellectually to my members out there, but am I clearly speaking to unbelievers that are out there in such a way? And you can disciple believers at the same time reaching unbelievers in a message. I think it is very critical that in our discipleship, we are doing evangelism, and in our evangelism, we're doing discipleship. In our teaching, we're doing both of those.
I love that, and just a different way of looking at what does it mean to be leading a church. One of the other chapters that was really interesting to me, because having worked at a church and being part of that, is you say we need to move from herding to mobilization, that it's different now, that it's not just a group of people that we're trying to bring in, but it's a getting that group of people to be mobilized for a common cause. Talk more about that and why churches need to be moving from herding to mobilization.
Well, so I think that a misnomer or a misunderstanding of the culture is, oh, because we're in post-Christendom, because people are leaving the church, we need to make our message softer. We need to make it more palatable if we're going to fill up our seats like we once had them full. Wrong. In fact, the millennials want to be a part of something meaningful. They want to be challenged. They want to have the bar set high. And one thing about the churches that were a part of this study is very clear that they did not lower the bar on what it meant to be a part of their church. They actually raised the bar. Some would require a level of giving. Some would require a level of participation in the church that you are not a member until you're willing to take on this level of mission or ministry. You know, they would actually raise the bar, not make it softer and easier and more placid to come inside and be a part. And the people that were unchurched for a number of years, and I tell the story of Sarah in there, of how it totally revolutionized her life to where she ended up living on mission in the last years of her life before she sadly passed away of cancer. But she, in her young life, in her energetic life, she had walked away from God and the church, and her marriage was about to fall apart. And then all of a sudden she comes back, but she comes back to a church that is full of high commitment and asking people to go on mission and live on mission, and she responded, and that's just one example of many. So just getting them in the seats is not enough. It's actually mobilizing them to our communities, mobilizing them to the nations is a part of that.
Well, and it seems that ministries and churches used to measure their success on how many people were a part of those ministries, but that's not what's going to keep people coming is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if we stop at measuring and how many people we have in our seats, we have done a disservice to the kingdom of God, a disservice to our members. We are very short-sighted. Sunday morning is only the launching pad. It's not the landing pad. It is where we need to measure and have be known greater for what happens the other 6 days of the week rather than what happens on Sunday. And so much emphasis is on what happens on Sunday in, I think, a Christendom church versus a post-Christendom church, a resurgent church, is the church that is more interested in what's happening 6 days out of the week instead of 1 day out of the week.
Well, and isn't that a testament to really most of the New Testament is now that you know what you know, what is it that you're going to do with the knowledge that you have?
Yes. In fact, I think the resurgent church can gain such inspiration, because if you think about it, in three large blocks of time period since Christ, pre-Christendom, that would be the years from Christ in the early church that we have in the New Testament, up to Constantine and the establishment of Christendom. And then fast forward that for generations and centuries to post-Christendom, that kind of began at the end of there's different markers, but it certainly by the end of World War II, it was certainly coming full swing at that point and coming across Europe and so forth. And that being the beginning of post-Christendom, and if you look at those blocks, we have more in common in post-Christendom with pre-Christendom than we did than in Christendom being in line with pre-Christendom. Now, I know that's a lot of Christendoms in there, but the point is I think we can be more – we can gain more inspiration from the New Testament in seeing how ostracized that New Testament church was, how against – how much marginalized they were, and we can gain inspiration from them and how we can live more like the New Testament than ever before.
So in all of your research and, of course, your writing, what gives you hope and optimism about the cause of Christ, especially in the local church living in this world that we're currently in?
I think because there are bright spots. It is discouraging when you see what happened in Paris just last night, whenever you, you know, just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, what happened in Dallas and all, even in Minnesota and all around. What is going on in our culture? We look at it and go, is there any hope? Is there any love? Is there any peace? I think this time we live in, the world, Western world, needs the church to be the church more than ever before. If there's any voice of love, if there's any voice of hope, if there's any voice of peace, it's found in the church. But if all we do is enter into the four walls of our church, shut our doors, and curse the darkness on the outside, and we don't figure out how to go back into the world 6 days out of the week and be the hope, be the love, be the peace, then we're in trouble. And so whenever you look and there's bright spots out there of churches illuminating their communities, bringing hope and love to their communities, then I go, yes. This is a great day to be a follower of Christ. This is a great day where you can make an impact in this day and age. And it's backed by research, and there are many examples of it. There are many bad examples, but there are many great examples out there as well.
Well, Mike, we just thank you so much for taking the time to not only collect all the research and the data, but for the passion you have for the church and how it can really be a conduit of change. Thanks so much for being part of that. And can you tell us how people can find out more about you or more about the Resurgent Church?
Absolutely. It's really easy. Just theresurgent.church, and you'll be able to get in touch with me if you have questions, or you'll be able to find where you can purchase the book or anything like that. But it's not about the book. I'm more about the kingdom of God and seeing the church alive. And if this book can be a tool to your listeners, then so be it. I just want to see light and truth and hope and love restored in our communities again.
Such a good word. Thanks so much, Mike, for joining us. We have a song
from
Matthew West that's kind of along the same theme of what is it that we are to do as part of the church.
We'll be right back.
Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. We've been talking about the resurgent church. What do we need to do if the church is going to continue to grow and thrive and succeed and bring other people into knowing the gospel of Jesus Christ? Well, joining me in this segment, we have, of course, Ted is still here at the board.
Yeah,
thank goodness.
Here.
Otherwise, things would fall apart, Ted.
Well, I don't know. We do what we can.
And Carissa is going to be joining us. She's been answering your calls and also, I'm sure, taking copious notes on what she thinks about what we've been talking about. And also joining us is Neil Stavem, who, of course, is our host on Monday through Thursday of Connecting Faith. And we call him the wise one.
Oh, wow. That's pressure. I want to hear what Ted says first.
You do.
I can decide if I, yeah, if I change my thoughts.
Okay. I'd rather go first then, because then I don't have to try and top what you say. So that's good. Actually, you know, I thought it was a quick little thing that he said, but it's really true. And there's a lot of deep truth in what he said about the, it's not about the kind of the surfacey stuff, you know, like is the shirt tucked in or not tucked in. It's not about the music necessarily. It's deeper than that. It's a deeper issue where we have to cultivate inclusivity, I guess, and try to get that community really thriving and strong again in the church. And how to attract new people. I mean, it's not just about these surface things. It's a deeper thing than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's so fun when you see it actually working, too. I mean, just these last couple of weeks, we had I've helped a woman move into her house, and her church body was just present in absolutely every aspect of that. People who knew her well, people who hardly knew her, and it was just reminiscent of what I remember the church being growing up. And it could be something much bigger, of course, than that. It could be helping someone in our community who's really struggling or an area that's very impoverished, but joining together as a community to help. And I think that's kind of what Mike was talking about, that there are many people who are attracted to that specifically, and what can the church do to make that possible?
He made some good comments. He said, you know, that we're really, that today's church is a lot closer to the first century church, you know, the church in the time of Acts than it is maybe at any other time. So we should take some courage from that. Although I was thinking, maybe my takeaway was, I wonder if it's, you know, maybe going to be hard for pastors and the board to think in new terms about measurement. You know, how do we really evaluate and measure success? I mean, we're just so kind of locked into looking at, you know, I mean, all of us grew up with the little, you know, board that said, you know, last week's offering, last week's attendance and all those things. I mean, it's a whole new paradigm.
It is a whole new paradigm. And I wonder if seminaries are training their pastors differently to look at this in a different way. Carissa, do you have anything to add?
She's on the phone at the moment, I think.
Oh, Carissa's getting some more wisdom from a wonderful listener.
They may want to go on or not, I'm not sure.
All right. Well, it was interesting to listen to what he had to say about millennials as well, that this new generation of people may have something different that they want to see in a church.
Right, and actually we have a clip, another angle on this. Bill Arnold recently sat in for our morning program, and I think it was this past January, talking with the Millennial Evangelical. That's the title given to Chris Martin. And in this segment, they're talking about what millennials need from the church.
So we talked about what millennials want, and now I think we got to get back to what they need. And it's always the one thing they need more than anything, and that is a clear gospel teaching.
Yeah, I think if you don't have clear gospel teaching, none of the other stuff really matters, mm-hmm. because it's the sun around which all of your other ministry planets orbit, right? I mean, it's if you're not clearly preaching the true biblical gospel of Jesus, your social justice is going to be out of whack, your community is not going to be what it should be, and you're not going to actually value the rich diversity that I said is valuable for reaching millennials. So the clear gospel teaching and value of the gospel of Jesus is the fount out of which everything else flows, I think.
Mm-hmm. And millennials are so, it seems to be so socially conscious, and yet they're more technology savvy than anybody, yet they crave community like no one else.
Yeah.
They're an interesting bunch.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And gospel teaching is as repulsive to millennials as it has been to everyone throughout history.
Of course.
You know, I mean, like I said, there's plenty of data to suggest and to confirm the idea that millennials are less religious. But at the same time, like in those same studies that say millennials are less religious, there's data that says that they have more wonder and amazement about what's out there in the universe than any generation. So like the thing about millennials, and I've said it here before and people have published it all over the place, millennials are spiritual but not religious. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea that they have some interest and feeling that something is out there. They just definitely don't think they're going to find it in the local church. Mm. Because of the institutional field primarily. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think, it's important for a church to feel like a family and to look like a family that cares for each other, that meets together more than just sitting in a room looking one direction for 45 minutes a Sunday or an hour a Sunday, and to really come together and support each other like a family does, because I think that's more attractive than perhaps the sort of business lecture model we've created through the latter half of the 20th century and even into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Chris, my last guest I had in studio was talking about a new church plant that is going into a theater. It used to be a movie house, then it was a professional theater, and now they are occupying the space, and they've got quite a different venue now, a very different feel. And, you know, if millennials are against walking into the traditional church in the suburbs, opportunities like this should be attractive to millennials.
So that was, we were listening to Bill Arnold. He had a conversation with the millennial evangelical, and he does have him on about once a month. So it's a really great way to get a different perspective if you are not a millennial. Fortunately for us, we have a resident millennial right here on the show. Carissa Rogers is listening in. She takes all of our calls and makes sure that all of our guests show up and listen and speak as well. Carissa, what are your thoughts on what Bill and Chris had to say?
Yeah, I think that it's just important to remember that as millennials, we still have the same faith, hope, and love in us from Jesus Christ as anybody else, no matter what their age is. And so it's up to us to really bring that faith alive and live it out in our communities. And there we can all come together and learn from our older generations as to how to bring it back to the truth, to the traditional ways of doing things, but also we can give them new ideas as well and just really come together in showing our communities what it looks like to be a Christian.
Well said, Carissa. Just wondering, as a millennial, do you think as a generation, for the generation as a whole, that they can see through pretty easily any kind of gimmicks that the church might try to do to attract them? I mean, they might just roll their eyes at some of those things.
I think I roll my eyes at myself.
Yes.
I think there's sometimes where I feel like I have an old soul in a millennial body, if that makes sense. Oh. And I just wish that there could be a little bit more transparency. But I do think, just like children have that with their parents, if they can just sense anything that's not right. Mm-hmm. So
I'm going to look for the eye roll in future discussions while Carissa's in the room. Thanks, Carissa, for sharing that. Well, we have another perspective from Christian music artist Chris August, just talking about authenticity and ministry as well.
As humans, we want God on our timing. Then you're like, I'm so glad God isn't on my timing, because my plans are dumb compared to the amazing plans that he has for me and the journey that he's put me on.
Sometimes it's hard to accept God's timing as opposed to our own timing. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. Music artist Chris August explains the process God has brought him through.
I wasn't ever sure, like, God, I thought you called me this music thing. You know, what am I supposed to be doing? And I heard someone once say, like, your misery becomes your ministry. And it's like, for years, it was the hardest thing for me. And, you know, I went through a lot of stuff with it and a lot of no's. But then you just keep at it. You work hard at something. God honors that when you work hard at something too. And when you have that faith in him and says, look, this is what you want, and just keep doing it, and he definitely honors that.
Like Chris, by faith and through hard work, you too can accomplish all that God has in store for you. I'm Steve Douglas.
Thanks so much, Steve. We'd love to talk about just God's timing, trying to find it, and the next Connecting Faith. We're going to talk a little bit with Ken Sandy about the ministry of RW360. We'll learn about relational wisdom. How can we understand how to best be relational with those who we love? and how to grow our biblical emotional intelligence as well and live out our calling to love God and to love others. That's Monday on Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you missed part of this program and you'd like to go back and hear it, you can go to myfaithradio.com, go to Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to look at all of the podcasts and listen as well. Thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.